Hello and welcome to the 2023 Pulp Kitchen Awards.
Second annual awards. Guys, if you're listening, it's a black tie affair.
Please take your seats. The ceremony is about to begin.
We didn't know if we were actually going to do it again, but damn it, we're doing it again. We're in black tie. Flick on the video.
And so are you guys too, I assume.
If you're not wearing black tie,
get out.
Go change. Listen, that's okay.
Watch out. No,
we're strange. We're
as you can gather from the nature of this episode, we will be reviewing the film. We will be going through
the film.
A select number of...
Did the I year. Say the film?
Yeah. My God. We're reviewing the films of the year. So yes. My auto cue cut out. And
2023, the year.
2023, the year that was.
Busy.
If you're listening to this, you would have just had Christmas. I hope you had a good one.
I hope everyone had a good Christmas.
And you can now squeeze back into your black tie, tux and dresses for this awards ceremony. It was a... What a year, 2023, for films.
Good year, busy. It just kept going on, like, in a good way.
Film or otherwise, I've really felt that this year has been long.
Yeah, well, film-wise, yes.
No,
yes.
I mean in life. I mean,
oh, no, in life it went really quickly for me.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
are you, like, down on the planet and I'm up in the spaceship like an interstellar?
Yes,
and I'm
experiencing
I've been there 2020 years, yeah. Well, we've got some interesting categories and also... Don't forget, we haven't forgotten, we put a message out to everyone.
Oh yeah, thank you.
For their favourite films and their favourite performances of the year, and we will be reading those at the end of the episode.
A couple of rules for the Pulp Kitchen Awards this year. We're only going to be talking about films that had a UK release date this year.
Yes.
Because we have actually had the chance to see films at screenings, London Film Festival, that aren't going to be out till next year. And we thought, even though there's definitely things that I think would make my lists and my nominees and my honourable mentions, I'm almost like, it's not really valuable to you guys if you haven't been able to see them yet. So these are all films that have come out, at least in the UK, this calendar year, from Pulp Kitchen Awards to Pulp Kitchen Awards. That's where it runs.
I do have one honourable mention this next year, but it's an honourable mention,
fine.
Not a winner.
Well, okay, well great. For everyone who's not managed to see that. But yes, we've done some categories, but in the interest of time, we're not going to do all the categories. We're doing all the main ones.
Yes.
We're not doing so many great things to do with sound and production design, but we're just not going to be here all day.
We're just going to try and get to the heart of the matter and the key questions that we want to talk about. When you speak to someone about the year of film that was, we have, I believe, six categories that... which are the ones that people often ask. And we begin with James. 2023, what was your biggest surprise?
Are you ready for this? My biggest surprise of 2023, starting with an easy one, was The Flash.
Yes.
It was easy. In terms of surprise, a film I had zero expectations going into, but had such a fun time.
Yeah.
The reason it's my biggest surprise of the year is that not only did I have so much fun watching The Flash, but there was this distinct moment where I'm having fun watching it, despite Michael Shannon's very rubbery face for most of that film. There's a moment right at the end, and if you've seen it, you know this gag, where you and I just looked at each other and slapped each other's knees and absolutely howled with laughter at the screen. And I cannot remember the last time a film has ended on such a great gag. I know we're alone, and not a lot of people liked The Flash. Yeah. I just don't see it. I had a really great time with it. We also saw it in the perfect environment, and I was surprised.
Yes.
Way more fun than I ever thought I would have. I would very happily rewatch it on a rainy Sunday. That is my biggest surprise of the year.
I actually, that was my honourable mention, actually. I'm glad you mentioned it. But I totally agree with you, though, for all the reasons you said. Look, when I think about The Flash, I know it looks terrible. When you see clips, particularly when you see clips of it on TikTok, when it's reduced to clips on TikTok, it really doesn't look good. It does also have some of the worst CGI, not just of this year, but of recent years. That's undeniable.
It falls into very typical DC and comic book fashion of like a main character in a CG suit screaming with lots of lightning bolts and things going around them to hold the thing in place so thing can happen.
But I agree. I mean, I think all the good gags in it have kind of been ruined online, but I'm like, when we saw it, I thought it absolutely worked. Yeah. And I think it kind of worked because all the people I know who have had an issue with the film have all been like sort of weirdly overprotective of it and like, oh no, you can't do this. And I'm like, it's a superhero movie. It's so silly and so fun and so ridiculous. So I know looking at it, it might seem like a bad film, but I agree with you. We had a blast and I would defend it and I'll happily watch it again.
It actually benefited from the DCU being slightly sort of unraveled and unfocused and lacking. It has no central structure really to hold its story down. So therefore it's quite liberating for Flash to be able to be like, cool, we're just going to have some fun, bring back some old Batman, CG stuff. Ezra Miller did a really good job with it.
Yeah.
Can't complain.
But that was my honourable mention. Mm-hmm. My biggest surprise of 2024 was actually Dungeons and Dragons Honor Among Thieves.
My honourable mention.
Because I think, like you, I have no familiarity with Dungeons and Dragons as an IP. I heard reasonably good things, went in to see it, and I had an absolute blast. Yeah. It's funny, it's charming, it just clicks into place and absolutely works. We forgot to mention the very bizarre Bradley Cooper cameo that happens in it.
Yeah.
Do you remember?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it doesn't really lead anywhere, no. But he's in it.
Yeah.
I really, really enjoyed that.
I was so ready. There are some films I see because I really want to see them for the show, and there are other films I see because I think I should for the show. Mm. That was one of those films, and I genuinely was ready to be like, oh, the studio and the look of it, but it was so easygoing and so fun.
What
again,
a romp.
Would happily rewatch. Biggest surprise of the year.
Absolutely, and it's such a nice feeling having a good surprise. You're like, oh, I love that a film can sneak up on me. I'll actually throw into that mix, if I may, one more honourable mention before we move on, which has just occurred to me. I would actually say Blackberry as well.
Oh, yeah.
Not a film you've seen. No. But again, a film I looked at, thought, looks like a cynical, 13 years too late, social network knockoff. Saw it. Really solid, really good stuff with some good performances in there.
A lot of love on social media for Blackberry. People saying, don't miss out on it. Really good one from this year.
You're going away for Christmas. I do think it's a good thing for a plane.
It's all my thoughts, exactly.
From Biggest Surprise, we now move on to James.
Biggest disappointment.
Mm. We hate to be negative, but we think it's only fair to reflect the biggest disappointments of the year. Mm. Would you like to go first?
You can go first. I went first last time.
So I don't have any honourable mentions, really. There are a couple of films that I was less warm on than others, like Bottoms, for example, but I'm prepared to accept that might just be me. But the film that has only just come out, but I did see a bit ahead of everyone else, that I was really, really disappointed by was Maestro. Mm. Okay. And I know you haven't seen it yet, but are you still planning to
I'm going
catch
to see it. I saw a screening this week, I might.
And it's been out, by the time this episode comes out, we've been on Netflix for a couple of weeks. Mm. I'm interested to hear people's thoughts. It's undeniably looks gorgeous, but I'm sorry. It absolutely gave me nothing. I learned nothing. I gained no greater insight or brilliance into Bernstein's mind. And I'm seeing all this, you know, heavy Oscar push they're doing for it, and lots of candid interviews with Bradley Cooper being like, you know, what I wanted to do was that. And it's like, I like Bradley Cooper. I really do. And I believe he's completely sincere, but this film really doesn't give you much at all. And it's a shame. It's a real sad, because I wanted to believe that Bradley Cooper can, you know, graduate from actor to director successfully.
And he talks so passionately about directing, and you can tell he's poured heart, soul, blood, sweat, tears. Again, I haven't seen it, but I am definitely curious, especially after your review. I do have honourable mentions for biggest disappointment. My first, and this is sort of a dishonourable mention in a way, my first honourable mention for biggest disappointment, Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny. Ooh. Even though my expectations, I can't say, were huge, I love Indiana Jones. It's such a core part of me falling in love with cinema as a young child. I adore Harrison Ford. It was just a shame that film really showed that character does need to let rest. He's far too old to be doing it. I don't think Harrison Ford is too old to be acting. I think it's just, he needs to play a very different role in that franchise for it to go forward. Ant-Man Quantumania, even though my expectations were low, what a standout in the year of films that just is a very, a real direction I don't want to see comic book films going in.
Yeah.
Those are my honourable mentions. But my biggest disappointment of the year for 2023 was Asteroid City.
Mm.
In the year when everyone was doing Wes Anderson well, apart from Wes Anderson. And I think you've got this, I think it's quite harsh because I just didn't get the film. I really watched it and I couldn't connect to it. And I think the very arch, emotionless delivery from the biggest cast of the year, a very typical of Wes Anderson's style, just didn't for me. It just failed to get to the heart of the story. I really left my screening wanting clarity and meaning, and it just didn't do a good job of telling me what am I meant to be feeling here. And it's a real shame because it looks gorgeous, but that lack of emotional connection revealed the flaws perhaps in Wes Anderson's style and where it can fall short. And I was really disappointed to say that I didn't like it.
Yes, I haven't seen it yet, but your review has kind of lingered in my mind. I don't know whether I will now. On to more positive news. We are going to be doing the best episode of TV. Now, James, if I may... Oh, no, would you like to go first?
No, please.
Biggest episode of TV. Now, we've tried to obviously whittle these answers down into honourable mentions and then overall
it's
winner.
Hard to just give one award.
It is hard to, and I will say you and I have noted that we've watched less TV this year. With the commitments of the show and focusing on film, it's been harder to commit to a TV show. But that said, for me, the best episodes of TV in 2023 is shared between three shows.
Okay.
It's episode 3 of The Last of Us, the Bill and Frank episode. It's episode 3 of season 4 of Succession with the thing with Logan. And it is season 2, episode 5 of The Bear, which is the Christmas episode with Jamie Lee Curtis, the Feast of the Seven Fishes. Those three episodes are in shows of which I feel different things about. You know, I like some of those shows more than others. But regardless of that, in the 1 hour or hour and a half that you spend in those individual episodes, it kind of clears away the rest of the show. And I feel like I'm watching like real theater. I'm really hooked. The performances, the drama of it. And I come away just sort of beaming with superlatives. And it's great television because, you know, the next morning you just want to rush up to someone and find them and say, did you watch that thing last night?
My honorable mention was the Succession Connor's wedding episode. And my pick was for the best TV episode of the year was The Last of Us episode 3, long, long time. The episode where it departs from Joel and Ellie, it's all about Bill and Frank. And, you know, it's if you've played the game, you know it's from a note that Joel finds in Bill's town that he hands, and it basically tells a little part of that story. And, you know, I watched the first two episodes of The Last of Us, and I had this huge sense of relief. Wow, they've done a really good job. This is really earning its right to be on TV. It's breaking the video game curse. But when I saw that episode of television, I thought that has really graduated from the source material, from the game, shown why it deserves to be a TV show in its own right, shown the power of cinematic storytelling and taking it apart from the game and showing why you wanted to make the TV show. It was just beautiful and sad. It's where two characters had to learn how to survive, learn how to live, and relearn how to love. And it was desperately sad and heartbreaking, and Max Richter's score was like a gut punch throughout the entire thing.
Absolutely.
And I remember I watched it on a plane, really just like expecting to like watch the next episode of my show, but I just was completely infatuated by it, and I left the plane just feeling like really refreshed from a great episode of TV. Bring on season 2, can't wait to see them do it.
And with Connor's wedding, that episode of Succession, I think we can still dance around what happens in it because some people might not have seen it yet. Are you okay?
I'm bleeding.
You've cut your hand.
On my white trousers. Accident once. I'm back.
And one of the other best episodes of TV this year, Connor's wedding from Succession, from the final season. That episode, I mean, I had kind of mixed feelings towards the last season of Succession. But what's great about that individual episode is that is when you really, the shackles are lifted off the kind of acting talent and you're just given this pure theatre and emotion confined to this boat, you know, where Connor's wedding is happening. And it just, it kind of lights the fuel that's been slowly dripping in for four seasons. And I just, that whole hour that you spend with them is so enrapturing. I don't think that the rest of the season actually reached that high, but that individual theatre of that episode, it's just...
It'll definitely go down as one of the best parts of that entire series. Yeah. I think as audience members, we were processing and shocked and reacting in real time, just like those characters were. And I really felt in the room, the use of the camera work was so well done and just unforgettable moments, and all of those actors, as you said, like just loving it and firing on all cylinders.
But
so
also it works because, I mean, without again trying to talk too much about it, but it is the episode that is about Succession.
Literally.
It literally is the Succession episode. If you could almost have had that be the movie of the show and you can have top tailed it, but that is the real heart of it, and they nail that so well.
And trying to balance what all of the show has been business strategy and manipulation into like emotional closure and how what's the best way to do this, what's the strategy for making sure I process this. There isn't. Really well done.
And my other favorite episode of the year, as I mentioned, is the Bear season 2 episode 5. And I mentioned this in a bonus episode, but what I love about that episode of the Bear, anyone who's seen season 2 of the Bear will know that that is the standout one, because it goes from being half an hour episodes to this hour and 10 minute section. And it you have had with the Bear's kind of sort of fleeting busyness as always, only half engaged with characters on the side, like John Bernthal's character. And what this does, it stops for an hour and 10 minutes and gives you those characters, gives you John Bernthal's character, gives you their mother, gives you the extended family, and locks you in the house with them in a very frenetic Christmas, and answers so many questions about who those people are that, and also just finishes like a play. It is unbearably tense to watch and uncomfortable, like the best of the Bear is, but that episode and the two other episodes we've mentioned of TV, great year.
Yeah.
Next is category, again, on the kind of specific level, if we were just doing episodes of TV as opposed to TV, we're now going to talk about the best scenes in movies, individual scenes. We always like talking about a little scene in a movie that works there.
We do.
James, do you have any honourable mentions?
I have a couple of honourable mentions. My honourable mention is the Beau is Afraid bathtub scene. if you know, this is essentially the first 50 minutes, call it an hour, of the film is kind of like this comedic short that leads to such a great gag in Beau Is Afraid. It goes on for another 2 hours in a direction that's just completely weird and feels like a massive overshare. But the bathtub scene in Beau Is Afraid was, I think, some of the hardest I laughed in the cinema. Mm. And the gag at the end of that moment is just so, so brilliant. And the comedic talent of Joaquin Phoenix sells it so, so well. I loved the world that Beau Is Afraid was communicating. That horrible heart attack, anxiety attack leading to that gag was just so, so good. That was my honorable mention. I also thought the final scene of How to Have Sex, really, really good. Super sad, somber, shot in this really interesting way. People who know, young girls who know how to communicate each other but lack the vocabulary to do so, I thought was really, really touching. And then I also thought that final scene in Oppenheimer, when Einstein is talking to Oppenheimer and Louis Strauss is walking along the gardens, and it is a very classic palindrome moment for Christopher Nolan, where the beginning mirrors the end but with new information and a new context for what has happened. I thought that was really well done. But one of my favourite scenes in cinema in 2023 has to be the final scene from Past Lives, where Nora and Haesung are waiting together, and that final scene lives in the silence. And the reason why that resonates with people so much, why it's such an effective ending, is because it is all about the decision to let go and to make a decision in life that you can't really take back. And this whole idea of in-yun, that maybe perhaps these characters have been together in a past life or they may one day be together in another life, is so beautifully romantic and deeply sad that it just leaves you on such a brilliant, brilliant note. And it broke everyone's heart, and you left that film with such a deep sense of happiness, sadness, nostalgia. And for me, it was just absolutely mesmerizing.
And if you're wondering if that's a spoiler, if you haven't seen it, I don't think it is. But having seen it, James has touched around it, that hasn't fully articulated, no way near fully articulated,
no, the whole
what
thing
actually happens in the end of that film. So don't worry, you can still watch that film having heard what James
that's
just said.
The best scene.
So my honorable mention for best scene of the film is also from Past Lives, but it's actually the scene between Nora and her husband earlier on in the film when they're in bed and they're talking.
Yes,
and basically it's after Haesung has come over to New York from Korea, and Nora is talking to her husband about how she dreams in Korean, and and she's really reflecting on how Korean she feels, and her husband sort of says, "You dream in a language that I don't understand." You know, it's just this kind of beautiful articulation of the gap between them and of the loss that she feels and the kind of loneliness. You have this scene where these two characters are so intimately close to each other, in bed, married, together, resting on each other. And they have so much love for each other, but her husband realizes there is an unfathomable gap. He can never bridge to this deep part of her that she feels completely alone in her cultural identity. It's just like really smart and really well pitched and really well articulated.
It would have been way too easy for that film to play those two men against each other in some sort of way. But the fact that it never does that makes that film so much more interesting.
Yeah.
Hey guys, Past Lives.
Great.
Go and watch it if you haven't.
But because I'm aware that we have a lot of love for Past Lives, I wanted just to keep that as an honorable mention. I'm actually going to give my best scene to a film that in the States technically came out last year, but in the United Kingdom, by our rules, James, came out this year, comfortably this year. So for me, the best scene, in a film that came out in 2023 in the UK was actually in Babylon, which is a film that you and I feel very mixed on.
Yep.
I think we agree the first 70 minutes is a rip-roaring fun, and then it really continues for like another 2 hours.
Yeah.
But there's a scene towards the end of that 70 minutes, which is all about the advent of sound in cinema. And you have this very tightly choreographed comedic set piece with Margot Robbie as an actress trying to come onto stage. All she has to do is walk on stage, hit her mark and say her line. But this is the beginning of sound in motion pictures. And the camera of the film is spinning around between the role of the director, the role of the sound producer, the role of the lighting, people running in and out of the studio, up and down. There's a booth that's getting overheated and Margot Robbie can't hit her line and her delivery has to be different. And it's about a 10-minute sequence that is so funny, so well executed, and articulates the frustration and dawning the brilliance and scariness of this new age of cinema. of this new technical achievement. I thought it was just excellent. And that was a real thigh slapping.
Yeah.
Well done. That's a really great set piece that you can lift out of that film.
And it works on its own.
And it works perfectly. The film never gets to that height again after that. But that credit where credit's due as an individual scene, it's really, really great. And I'm not forgetting that we have a listener who went to see it 6 times at the cinema. So I'm sure there are other scenes.
He's the Leonardo DiCaprio. Like, oh, wait,
yep, that's me. So that, I would say my favorite scene is in Babylon.
I love how much frantic sense of urgency there is in the room and how much tension there is. And one more time, no, we need to get this. Yeah. Cigarettes pouring over tripods, just really,
and
really
by the, you know, the whole kind of, are you kidding me? The screaming, by the end, they're shouting at each other.
The guys in the sound booth, like, caked in sweat, just dying. It's so, so good.
So our next category, moving swiftly on, is for best performance. And this is the one we put out for everyone. We asked themselves about their best performances, and we'll get to that. Mm. I find this a very tricky one, but tricky because of there's so many to choose from.
Yeah.
James, would you like to go first?
So my honourable mentions for best performance, I have the most honourable mentions for best performance. I think Ryan Gosling, Barbie.
Yeah, great.
Stole the show.
Yes.
I think he was the standout of that movie. He had such a great comedic delivery. That film is really, really funny.
Yes.
And Ryan Gosling does such a great job doing a role, which I actually think is harder to do than it might appear. I thought he was really great.
I would just say that as well. Like, whenever people talk about Ken, like, Margot Robbie is great in Barbie as well.
Oh,
but
so
I've always thought that the thing with is because Margot Robbie's character Barbie is so reactive to things. She's an avatar where things just come and react. She just reacts to the world around her. I think that doesn't make her quite as compelling as someone like Kev.
I think I listened to a really interesting conversation when Margot Robbie was talking about how much she struggled with coming with her Barbie character, a character that doesn't essentially know who she is in the world. And she had to really just focus on the fact that Barbie doesn't have an inner monologue until all of a sudden she does.
Yes.
She had to really find that sense of emptiness and then move on from it, which I think that's a really hard thing to do. Honorable mention goes to Robert Downey Jr. as Lewis Strauss in Oppenheimer.
Agreed.
What a performance. What an actor. And I just thought, wow, hello, Robert Downey Jr., who I already know is good, but being activated and clearly loving the work he's doing for Christopher Nolan. Cillian Murphy in Oppenheimer carries that film and does not let that 3-hour runtime go. And he's there for every single moment of that film. Robert De Niro is my close second in Killers of the Flower Moon. When we saw that film, I think we were both taken aback by how just like unrelenting and sinister he is. And it shows why he's absolute master of his craft. That film owes a lot to Robert Downey Jr. Robert De Niro.
Timmy Roberts.
Robert De Niro. So, so good. But my best acting performance of 2023 has to go to Sandra Hüller from Anatomy of a Fall. She is stuck in the middle of a case where the French court is indicting her for the murder of her husband. And she is now in the process where it all requires an autopsy of not just the body and not just the house, but of her entire relationship. She's so good at keeping her motives and her thoughts buried deep. I think the whole character was judged so well. There's just the right amount of melodrama in that film, but only at the moment the film needs it. Otherwise, it's played down so well. It's brutally realistic, and I feel like that performance just held the film in place and made it that amazing magnetic film that it was. Sandra Hüller, I'll be looking out for whatever you do next.
I agree on all those accounts. So I would just like to give with my honourable mentions for best performance. I agree Cillian Murphy. I agree Ken. I agree Robert Downey Jr. I agree Sandra Hüller. I'm actually going to be, this is where I want to be a little bit cheeky, because my honourable mention is to talk about a film that I saw this year but is not out until 2024, but it's out in less than a month. Okay. So, and that's why it's only an honourable mention. If we were allowing it,
oh, honourable mention, I'll allow.
This is an honourable mention. Absolutely. So my just a big honourable mention for my favourite performance that I saw this year is what I will think will be the best, one of the best performances of 2024, which is Andrew Scott in All of Us Strangers.
Yeah.
A film I'm really excited for everyone
to see.
I can't
wait to see it.
He is absolutely heartbreaking in that movie. It really grounds the whole thing in a movie that only has really 4 characters. And that film is being released at the end of January, and there's a lot of good buzz about it right now, which makes me think, fingers crossed, there could be a world where Andrew Scott gets nominated for Best Actor for that at the Oscars. And I would be delighted, because it is such an intimate, heartbreaking, sad performance from an actor who is really, we've seen mostly on the small screen, has done films, but I think it's just so deserved. And I loved him in that. If we were doing it this year, I would have said, that's my favorite performance of the year. But... The rules are the rules. So, I think... excuse me.
It was George's last episode.
We never did know.
We never did know. Andrew Scott speaks at your funeral.
I don't know what he would have chosen, but...
I am his favourite performer.
I am, as far as we know, his favourite performer.
Okay. But the rules are the rules, and therefore my favourite performance of this year, it's a tough one, but basically picking up on a little bit what you said, I think I will have to go for De Niro in Kiss the Flower Moon, just because we are so used to... We've seen De Niro in loads of films, the good and the bad, but I think particularly in recent years, we have seen him do a lot of dross, okay? Yeah. Don't get me wrong, yeah, every so often he'll do an Irishman, but he's done, you know, The Family, Dirty Grandpa, all that kind of stuff. And he's become a very familiar, sometimes sleepwalking presence. Mm. And what I was immediately engaged with in Kiss the Flower Moon is that he is switched on, engaged in an upper register that he saves for Martin Scorsese. And I think that... that completely electrifies the film, and he is clearly so invested in it, and I just thought it was completely magnetic. Mm. So, I mean, hot take, Robert De Niro, good actor, but in this, he really does show why that he's so revered. So
it's a really sharp film. Nothing about it is sleepy. Nothing about it is unconsidered.
For a
you
film
just get the sense the whole time.
Absolutely. For a film that's 3.5 hours long, it's not baggy, it's tight, it's taut, it's focused.
It's so rare to have a film be that long and cover that much where you don't go, well, that bit.
And also, I will say, you know, Lily Gladstone, an honorable mention as well. Yeah. I mean, fantastic. But in a way, she can't be in the film more due to the narrative reasons for not being in it. But like, I wish she was in the film more.
Yeah.
So I think for me, I'd probably give it to De Niro. Which brings us to our top films, okay? James and I are both going to talk about our favourite films of the year and also our honourable mentions. And James, I don't know about you, but I've been a little bit cheeky and I have 6 honourable mentions to start with, okay? Because there are a group of films that I really liked and really enjoyed, and although they might not hold them up to the same sort of prestigious level as the ones that are at the top for me, I wanted to give them a shout because I look back at the films I've seen this year and I go, yeah, that one. So just a quick run through in no particular order, because other than alphabetical, here are my honourable mentions for favourite movies of the year, movies I've really enjoyed, which include Blackberry, which I've already said, The Fablemans, which I really enjoyed, came out very early this year, Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3, which I thoroughly enjoyed, in a year when Marvel is doing absolutely terribly, that was actually, for me, one of the best Marvel films of mine. Reality, which is the movie with Sydney Sweeney, really tight, underseen thriller, all confined to one space, a very play-like theatrical film, but not in a negative way, one that enhances the film viewing. Rye Lane, I absolutely loved.
Yeah.
Huge thumbs up, especially if you're outside of the UK and you haven't seen that. It's a real lovely new type of British rom-com that celebrates London, multicultural London, full of sunshine and colour and joy. It's wonderful.
Doesn't look like any other film you've seen either.
Not at all. Very beautiful. And I'd also want to give a shout out to Still, which is a documentary about Michael J. Fox and his struggle with Parkinson's disease. That film takes a really important subject matter, educates you about it, but it's also so inspiring. Michael J. Fox is such an inspiring figure. When watching this film and whenever I see him interviewed, I just think, you are such an inspiration. It's brilliant. It's a lovely short 90-minute documentary. Those are my honourable mentions. And I think now, those are my honourable mentions. But my top films, James, I'm going to give top 3 if that's okay. Can I do that?
Yeah, go
because,
for it.
Because I find it hard to differentiate them. And
it's our show.
It's our show. We make the rules. So my top 3 films in no particular order, and I don't think there'll be any surprises here, and I'm sure there's overlap between us, James. My top 3 films of the year are Past Lives, Killers of the Flower Moon, and Anatomy of a Fall. And you, James?
I have the exact same top 3.
I just knew that.
They are
the best.
They are the best films of this year.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's for reasons I've already discussed, but I can get into it. Should I give you my honorable mentions, which are also cheeky because they're not out this year? But Priscilla and Hitman.
Yes. I'm and same thing.
Not giving the award, but in terms of honorable mentions at films that really I think I can see Priscilla winning a Best Director award. There's something about the direction by Sofia Coppola that really captures the attention. Not the film I thought it was going to be when I went to go see it. Excited to unpack it again. And I might actually see it again. And then Hitman. Yeah. So hard to talk about the film because no one's seen anything about
it. There's not even a trailer out yet.
And I'm like really excited. I will definitely see it again. And I'm excited for other people to react to it. I don't know how the trailer's going to pitch it because it's quite a weird premise. But anyway, those are my honourable mentions. But my top three are essentially the same. I think one sticks out for me the most.
Past Lives?
Past Lives.
I think so. For me, might just have the edge because what I like about Past Lives is that it's a simpler film, but it's kind of elegant in its simplicity.
Yeah.
I keep saying this, I can run my hand along Past Lives, getting from beginning to end. I can see the whole movie in my head. It's a smooth structure.
Yeah.
Past Lives it really lands the plane at the ending. Totally. You know, like, it really could have fallen apart, but that really gets it right. Mm. And I love that. With Killers of the Flower Moon, what I love is that going into that 3.5-hour movie, it's the relief I felt 5 minutes in. I've been like, oh God, I'm with Martin Scorsese, who just knows how to tell this story. Yeah. And I would happily, easily throw on that 3.5-hour movie and it feels less of a slog.
Yeah. Wall Street doesn't feel like a slog when you're watching it.
When I came out of Poor Things with my friend, Poor Things is 2 hours 20.
Yeah.
My friend was like, that felt longer than Killers of the Flower Moon because it's just the way it was structured. Yeah. It's really pithy. And with Anatomy of a Fall, I mean, you spoke about it just now, but I agree that even for someone like me who got slightly sleepy at the beginning because of the environment I saw it in, it just is so gripping and just makes you feel like you're watching great drama. Yeah. Great drama and the framework of a legal thriller around a relationship and a marriage. It just felt fantastic. And also about Anatomy of a Fall, best supporting performance, I'd just like to say, for the boy.
Who's really good.
Just fantastic kid. And best supporting dog as well.
Best canine without doubt goes give to that
dog an Oscar.
If you've seen the film, you know what that dog has to do to turn the face of the film. And he just totally goes for it.
Also, someone sent me a link that dog did win an award.
And
I'm like, well
good
deserved.
Good boy. I hope the dog gets like an edible award. With a bone. Yeah.
But great. I mean, no surprises there. But yeah, those two films are really wonderful films.
Flip between all of those three. I had such a sense of urgency when I'd seen the other two to be like, oh my, like shake everyone, go and see this. My best film of the year is Past Lives. And I can totally tell for me, because every time I've spoken to someone who's also seen that film, I get this really distinct reaction of, oh, Past Lives. Yeah. I hope you've seen it too. I hope you felt that same thing. I think it has this intoxicating sadness, this really wonderful capturing of nostalgia and remorse. It presents a relationship, or two relationships technically, that are really carefully constructed over years and years. It felt so deeply personal to the director, and therefore that personal touch transferred to the audience and just made it resonate. I love how pauses and silences were just as important as the dialogue, if not more. It speaks to anyone who's ever left anyone behind, ever left a part of their life behind, or left a place behind. And I was just so sad. I sound really sappy when I talk about this film, but I can't stop thinking about it, and I just love it. It's my favorite of the year.
I agree. That Past Lives is a film I haven't been able to sort of shake from my head. Yeah. That and All of Us Strangers, but that's for next year.
Yes.
I've agreed that. But Past Lives, I agree, I do tumble it over in my head. And every so often, if I want to feel a bit close to it, I'll listen to the Sharon Van Etten song they use at the end. I think, oh yeah, what a movie.
Yeah.
And those were our awards for this year, the Pop Kitchen Awards. But what's been so exciting this year is putting out the question to the Sirens on social media and hearing everyone's reactions. So we are going to read out what everyone else thinks about their favorite films and performances of 2023.
So guys, as George said, we asked you to send in your favourites of 2023. You send us emails to hello@pulpkitchenpodcast.com and you DM'd us on Instagram @pulpkitchenpodcast. Will sends in his favourites of the year. He says, favourite film of the year was Across the Spider-Verse. That was so good. Yeah. Loved that. Nothing pulled me into cinema that much to watch it. And I have to say, I think Ryan Gosling killed it as Ken as well. So silly and serious at the same time. Will, I can't believe I didn't mention Across the Spider-Verse. What a movie. And according to the IMDb Top 250, it's the 13th greatest film of all time. It's not at all skewed by recency bias at all.
Luke writes in and says, Oppenheimer, Across the Spider-Verse, and Past Lives, all amazing in very different ways. Ryan Gosling as Ken was effing unbelievable.
Yeah.
And Glenn Howerton was great in Blackberry too. I thought it would be difficult to take him seriously, as I've always loved It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, but I constantly bought him to be the character he was portraying. Love the podcast. Let's meet for a pint.
This next one is from Grace, who says, "Hey guys, not putting one name before the other. Past Lives was easily my favorite film of the year. I've never watched a film in a full cinema in complete silence. It was captivating, beautiful, made your heart ache for so many reasons. Loved it. I thought Ryan Gosling as Ken was perfection. And Lily Gladstone was incredible in Killers of the Flower Moon, as were all the performances in that film, really. So many others, but they were who I thought of first. P.S. Thank you for appreciating great of the Muppets Christmas Carol. Every year I try to convert friends and family and to love it and fail. Now I know you guys are legit. Love the pod. Merry Christmas, Grace." Thank you,
Grace, very much for that. We're seeing, it's good to start seeing what the consensus of opinion
is. Yeah.
This next message is from Oceans A Bevan. Get it?
Very good.
Friend of the show, Bevan, of course, writing in saying, "Oh, okay, so 2023 review. This is so exciting. I can see you're writing this in the moment, Bevan.
You're running through the streets.
I've been really enjoying the pod and I've been spreading the word of Pulp Kitchen, so hopefully your Irish audience is growing." Thank you, Bevan.
I think it is.
"For me, performance of the year has to be De Niro in Killers of the Flower Moon, truly one of my favorite performances of his in a long time. Such a wicked character in such a charismatic package. As for film of the year, I would say Anatomy of a Fall. I was really impressed with this film. The way it was edited, the performance were insane. With a special shout out to Milo Machado Grainer, who plays the child, the boy in it. His performance was some of the best acting in the film. Also, I caught an advanced screening of All of Us Strangers. Have you guys seen it yet?" Yes, Bevan, friend of the show. Come on.
George has seen it.
Reviewed it 2 months ago. I thought that Andrew Scott was pure magic in the film, and the allure of Paul Mescal is, of course, present. But this is definitely Andrew's film. It is absolutely Andrew's film. The scoring and the way it was shot, it was electric, and particularly in the nightclub scene. Also, then Bevan, you go on to ask a question or write something about the ending of the film, and I'm not going to read it out because I don't want to do any sort of spoilers, but I will say, I see what you mean, Bevan. We'll probably talk about it in a spoiler cast when we actually get to the film's release the end of January. I know what you mean. We'll be interesting to discuss that further. Thank you,
Bevan. Adam writes in and says, "Past Lives. Everything about this film, though mainly Greta Lee's performance and Celine Song's direction. As you mentioned in your review, a delicate film, and I think a film that captures the complexity of being human, being able to both love the life she has and the one she could have had with Hae-sung, as perfectly shown in the final scene. On my watch through, I was struck by the idea of gaze from both the camera watching them and emphasised at the start in the bar, a film that has stayed with me since watching it."
This next message is from Maliki, who says, "Past Lives was my favorite film of the year. And, oh, James, my favorite performance was Rachel Zegler in The Ballads of Songbirds and Snakes." How do you feel about that? Best performance.
I just can't. I mean, it's a performance that's misjudged. I don't think it's like an atrocious performance. It is not
belonging in
I think it's bad, but it's not like the worst. Right. It does not belong in that universe.
But the best, her favorite performance of the year.
I'm so happy for you. I've had quite a few people say that they really enjoyed The Hunger Games. I just didn't see it. I thought it was absolutely awful, but I'm happy for you. We have got Katie just writes in and says, "Has to be Past Lives for me. Beautifully portrayed, had me gripped at every scene."
Friend of the show, Lucy, says, "The End We Start From / Bottoms was her favourite films of the year, and her favourite performance was Mia McKenna-Bruce in How to Have Sex."
Oh, yeah. So good. Carrera writes in and says, "Across the Spider-Verse for sure, best movie, best performance either Alison Oliver or Davine Joy Randolph."
In? I don't know. In whatever films they were in.
Alison Oliver. Well, you got a vote.
You got it. This next message is from Thomas W. I'm sorry.
I don't know who they are.
We're busy. There are two movies that were equally fascinating for me this year, but in completely different ways. So I say Barbie, which was as fun and clever and visually bombastic movie that was entertaining in every way, and The Old Oak, which is Ken Loach's new final film, as a more quiet movie that hits deep emotionally and gives you a lot to think about and lots of perspective without acting like racism and bigotry has any kind of argument. And my favourite performance was therefore has to be Ryan Gosling as Ken.
We didn't do a category for it, but production design in Barbie was world class.
Yeah.
Unlike anything I've ever seen.
Well, until you see Poor Things and then you'll change your mind.
Oh, right. Okay, yeah. Fine. There you go. This next one is from
Ashling,
who says, "Oppenheimer, Cillian Murphy." Yeah. Very, very singular there. I love that.
Tommy says, Killers of the Flower Moon for best movie and Robert Downey Jr. for Oppenheimer for best performance.
At just sort of video diaries, no name, says, "Saltburn was my fave and Carrie Mulligan in Maestro was phenomenal."
She is good in Maestro, don't get me wrong. Maestro is lovely performance-wise. It's also deeply disappointing. Nina says her favorite movies were Oppenheimer and Red, White, and Royal Blue. Hang on. Red, White, and Royal Blue. Isn't that that kind of, it's a rom-com on Netflix, isn't it? It's the kind of, it's, but that's fine. I'm not saying that's bad. I'm just saying I'm surprised to have it mentioned, but good. Hey, it's your favorite movie. Enjoy it. What an interesting double bill with Oppenheimer, and your performances, your favorite performances are the main cast of Oppenheimer, all of them.
Mr. Brightside says favorite film of the year has to be Oppenheimer, but Past Lives, a Pulp Kitchen favorite, coming in as close second, a literal favorite. For us, what an incredible surprise that movie was. Favorite performance has to be Ryan Gosling for Ken. But besides the obvious Robert Downey Jr. in Oppenheimer, I would also give a shout out to Jay Baruchel in Blackberry, Sydney Sweeney in Reality, and Andrew Scott in All of Us Strangers. Also, just a quick thank you for keeping your fans so entertained throughout the year. Hope all the sirens and you have a good Christmas and New Year's.
Good shouts, Mr. Brightside.
Lots of similar threads, and Ryan Gosling's Ken getting fan like favorite. A sort of collective people's vote.
This next message from Watched It podcast just says Past Lives.
This next one is from Amy, who says, hello, James and George. Love the screen enthusiast community you've created. I'm so glad I found it. My favorite performance and wow moment for this year is Succession Season 4. The cast, writers, and production was fantastic, and the classical hip-hop score is genius. For me, Jeremy Strong in particular does something incredibly special. I don't know how I came to feel so much sympathy and care for Kendall, who's such a flawed and at times awful person, but that's Jeremy's gift. I must also mention Sarah Snook, who I first came across in Australian TV drama The Beautiful Lie, a modern-day adaptation of Anna Karenina. For anyone who wants to see more of Sarah, I highly recommend it. Keep up the great work. Amy from Sydney.
Thank you, Amy. Just a few more now. Kelly says, in my opinion, The Ballad of Songbirds and Snakes was as good as the book. Loved it, James.
Kelly, I just don't see it, but I'm so happy you enjoyed it. Sorry, Lauren. That is the only film of all the films we've reviewed which I've disliked where most people have come back and said, you're wrong, it's really good.
Yeah.
I've not had a single other film which I've had that an opposite reaction to from so many fans. But there you go. This next one is from V, who says, best movie, Monster, best female performance, Greta Lee, best male, Andrew Scott, and All of Us Strangers.
There you go. And this one from Lucas, who says, best film, Saltburn, in brackets, sorry, George, and best performance, Robert Downey Jr. Well, I agree with one of those. Thank you very much for your messages. And we have just a few on email too.
Puck writes in and says, hi, James and George, to hello at popkitchenpodcast.com. Says, I have a confession to make. I've been listening to your podcast since episode 20-ish.
Wow.
And I've realized last week that I've been mixing you two up for all this time.
What?
Being really bad with names, I just found James to be more of a George and vice versa.
You clearly don't watch the video.
I'll go, George.
Yeah.
And George will go, James, do you? Blah, blah, blah. And that usually gives it away within an episode for most people. But yeah, that's fine. Anyway, Puck here from the Netherlands. I saw your story on Instagram asking for our favorite performances in films of 2023. So I had to share my thoughts. I have to say I'm a big Wes Anderson fan. Him releasing 5 films, Asteroid City and the Roald Dahl shorts this year, was an absolute blast and I adore every single one of them.
Now, is there a spoiler coming in this one? Because I think there was earlier, by the way.
I know, around it. One of them even includes my favorite performance in the year. Make a guess. I did not watch a lot of new movies this year because I've been working on shrinking the size of my huge watch list, but I did have the most fun at the cinema when watching Barbie. I actually found it to be so clever and funny. I mean, everything has been said about the film and the performances. Gosling for Best Supporting Actor. Now, for my favourite performance of the year and the real reason for this email, I'd be very impressed if you would have guessed it, Jeff Goldblum in Asteroid City. He plays the alien, and although not even recognizable, he pulls it off perfectly. The moment he poses, he pulls it off perfectly. It's an absolute comedic genius from Goldblum. Maybe not the answer you're expecting, but I hope you like it. I don't know when or if you'll be reading this, so in case I don't see you, Merry Christmas, Happy New Year, and good night. From Puck.
Thank you, Puck. This next email is from Sam, who says, hi, gents. Firstly, thank you so much for all your work this year. As I've mentioned in previous messages, you have kept me going on long runs and looking forward to many more in 2024. On to your questions. Now, if I'm going on films I loved most this year, I have two. I would have to go with Rye Lane. I don't think I can say much about this film that hasn't been said. It's just wonderful, and the lunch date scene is perfection. It's a lovely film. I love Rye Lane. Now, on to one that will surprise people. Maybe I only watched It's a Wonderful Life last night, and as expected, I absolutely loved it. Oh, yeah, it's great. I mean, that didn't come out this year, but glad you liked it. Performances, as a massive fan of The Bear, I'll have to go with Jeremy Allen White, particularly in the season 2 finale. I've watched the scene over and over, and I would love to give a special mention. I would also like to give a special mention to Rob Brydon's cameo in Barbie as Sugar Daddy Ken.
Great. Very good.
I hope you lads have a nice and well-earned break and look forward to hearing many more reviews and next year, especially when we eventually get Dune Part 2.
Coffee!
Happy Christmas and New Year. Cheers, Sam.
I just would like to say that I assume this is clear, but every time we're reading an email and me and George go, that's because there's a spoiler and the episodes are spoiler free and we're not having like a stroke.
Wow. What an interesting consensus.
And that concludes the second Pulp Kitchen Awards.
Well, one thing's clear. Everyone wants Ryan Gosling to win for Ken.
For best supporting. It would almost be because it's a comedic role and comedic roles don't typically ever win Academy Awards.
More of a victory.
It might be the first one. Not that the Pulp Kitchen is like a huge sample size, but I'm almost like it could take it as a comedic performance.
Yes. And is it there a slight worry though that it's going to be like Barbie, all about Margot Robbie and women and stuff, and we're going to give the award to Ryan Gosling? This is the end of the episode for 2023, our last episode of 2023. And I think we both want to take a moment to say thank you for everyone who has listened to the show and joined us this year and stayed with us this year to listen and engage with us. We have really appreciated it. You have grown this show through your listenership and we are incredibly grateful. The show is in a different place now than it was at the beginning of the year.
And oh my God.
I said the same thing last year, but it's true this year. We have really enjoyed growing this show with you guys and seeing where we can take it. We had a great time seeing just a handful of you at the pub quiz. And we have many, many exciting plans for 2024. Just thank you so much. You are such an engaged, interested film watching crowd. We love to do it.
Every single email we get in is always just a pleasure to read, to hear people being turned on to films they weren't otherwise going to choose. And then this year, getting the chance to meet 100 of you in a room was amazing. And every time anyone's ever come up to me, whether it's at a rave or just sitting across from me in the tube, it's genuinely always like makes my day that someone is like, oh, I enjoy what you make. It's really, really cool.
And isn't it exciting that this time next year, we would have seen a whole load of new films that we haven't even seen yet. And there are some new favourites.
I remember saying exactly at the first Pulp Kitchen Awards, I cannot wait for the film I don't know I'm going to love next year. Because there's always films that we're going to do when we come back, looking ahead to 2024.
Yes.
And we always try and find as many films as we can to talk about. But I always say there are so many that I don't know are coming that are going to completely take me by surprise. And I can't wait to be talking about them in a year's time.
Thank you guys again. There's no games this week just because we've been so busy with the emails and focusing on the awards. It's a special episode.
Yes.
But have a happy new year and we will see you guys in 2024.
Thanks so much for listening.
Bye guys.